Welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing the ramifications of change in our communities and beyond, and how today's choices will impact tomorrow's community. This program is a combined project of KCBX and our team of program hosts. Today, Fred Monroe talks with his guests from Restorative Partners. They'll share with us how the concept of restorative justice is working to break the cycle of incarceration in ways having positive lasting effects on all sides of the criminal justice system, including the families of those incarcerated and recently released from custody. Join Fred and his guests for this frank and important discussion. We do invite you to listen, learn, and participate. Today, we are live in the studio, and we can take your calls at 805-781-3875. So why don't you join us? And with that, let's join Fred Monroe and his guests. Over to you, Fred.
Thank you, Brad. Glad to be with you today. This is a topic we have had on the program before. It's in the category of one of those topics that there's always good new news about. But also it's a very good project that sharing with most of you is a fascinating way to look at what's going on in the world. I'm your host, Fred Monroe, and our goal is to bring you credible and valid information and insights from diverse members of the community. And I can assure you today is a diverse member of the community program. In the 1970s, it was recognized that the criminal justice system of our country seldom had all the tools to kind of challenge repeat offenders. We've assumed over the years that pretty much everyone who ends up back incarcerated got back there because there was no way to break the cycle. And what restorative justice and restorative partners – restorative justice is the discipline we're talking about, Restorative Partners is the local organization that's involved in it, has found some incredible ways to really look at and pull together an understanding of what can be done to break the cycle of incarceration, which for lots of families on both sides, the family of the incarcerated and the families and the life of victims from incarceration. A lot of you may be thinking that finding a way to break the cycle of this is just some liberal way to kind of make excuses for what's going on. But frankly, there's far more to it than that. My guests today are Sister Teresa Harpin. She is the Executive Director of Restorative Partners. And at some point during the program, she'll give us some insights as to how this organization came about, because as much as I've watched them for the years, I still am flabbergasted that they have become so successful and such a good member of the community for what is something that for a lot of people is a bewilderment of how you would deal with formerly incarcerated people or former criminals and get the answers you want. Joining us today also is Justin Ennis. He is a community leader who embodies the mission of restorative justice because he is a former incarcerated member of the community. And we'll talk with him specifically about how he ended up being here today with us and the work that's gone on that's made him a incredibly productive member of the community and an incredible example of the work that restorative justice does. There are very few people, I would say, that and I'm kind of leaving my notes here, if you will, for a moment. There are very few people, I would say, who come out of the criminal justice system that ever want to revisit the criminal justice system in a way to help others. We will talk to Justin today and get an understanding of not only how he does that, but why he does that. It's a very, very fascinating process. I also seldom read verbatim one of the notes from one of my guests on the air, but I could not put this any better, and just asking Sister Teresa about it may cause us to lose some of it. One of her comments with regards to what we would want to make sure people understand is that restorative justice – so I'm going to read verbatim what she wrote for us. Restorative justice practices matter, perhaps more now than ever before, because they directly address the harm, disconnection, and polarization that defines the social and political moment. And they offer concrete ways for people to repair relationships rather than deepen cycles of punishment, resentment, and fear. Sister Teresa, that is, if we just talked about that for the next hour, we could probably spend 2 hours getting through it all. Give us some background on what brought this all about.
Well, as I reflect on our work at Restorative Partners, in dialogue with what's going on in the universe, there's so much pain and suffering. There's so much division. There's so much misunderstanding and lack of communication. There's so much we and them dialogue, putting ourselves at a distance from one another. And what restorative justice does as a way, a lens of which we engage in life, it's always looking at all parties. And I'm going to describe the three parties engaged in restorative justice practices. It is those that have harmed, those that have experienced harm, and the community. Now, I personally could find myself in each one of those circles. The beauty of it and the secret sauce of restorative justice and restorative justice practices is that the whole of those three circles come together as much as they're able to in order to address conflict, violence, differences, in whatever circle conversation you find yourself in. Today, we need this more than ever because there is so much separation and division in our culture. And I think we as a people, adopting restorative practices, restorative justice as a way of being in the world, we could have much better results than what we're trying to do now is just continue the division and the harm that is being experienced in so many people's lives.
Well put. Justin, I guess we probably need to break the ice, and I alluded to you pre-program when we were talking about things that how much of your history you are willing to share is really up to you. But I want to at least be candid with our listeners. You are a formerly incarcerated lifer that is not in prison anymore and not under parole anymore. And in some ways, as best I understand it, your position of not being under parole anymore has a lot of weight tied to what you do for Restorative Partners. And I guess I just probably need to just say, how did you get here, and let you run with it?
Well, how did I get here? I made bad decisions as a young man. I was a hurt person that didn't know how to fix myself. I didn't want to be broken. I just didn't have the solution at the time, and that ended up leading to being sentenced to life in prison. And at some point during that incarceration, there were programs like Sister Teresa's and other things that kind of came in there and offered me a different perspective. And I started shifting my perspective. Instead of feeling like the victim for being sentenced to life in prison, I started realizing that, it was an opportunity. An opportunity to change, and that I wasn't the victim here. There were other victims, and that I was deserving of the punishment that I got. And I started living a different way. And as a result of living that different way, it started. My daughter wrote a letter to Santa, And it said, you know, the standard children things of, you know, dear Santa, I would like some board games. I would like a Hatchimal, a Polaroid camera, and P.S. Santa, help my dad get out of prison one day. And I had started thinking about the person I killed and that he had a daughter who would forever be feeling that same way. And the best thing that I could do to honor them would be to change my life. And that's when I started participating in programs, got that change of perspective. As a result of living that way, I was released from prison. And that's what got me involved in trying to be a part of the solution moving forward, because I can never undo what I did, but hopefully my experience will prevent other people from making those same decisions. And so I feel like I've been called to participate in being part of the solution, like Sister was saying.
The dividing line that we have as a society between victim and perpetrator and family sometimes seems like it's probably hard to pin down. I suspect that everyone is affected. Your own child, to some extent, was a victim of your activity, along with the child of the, as best I can tell, now deceased father. Have you met that other child?
No.
Okay. Is there a circumstance under which you would meet the other child?
Oh, if they ever wanted to meet me or, yeah, of course, yeah, I would participate in that.
So what got you to the point of clearly deciding that the way you've been making decisions was not effective anymore? Because it's no news to anyone. There's a lot of people who are with your background who are still in prison and may never get out. So there had to be something that you were looking at differently that made you a good candidate for a more positive experience.
One day after receiving the letter from Santa, I had to ask myself, am I really receiving rewards from the behavior? Because when I was younger, I had perceived rewards, whether it was esteem from a certain peer group, financial, perceived safety, things that were an encouragement, a personal encouragement for me to keep doing the bad behavior. Eventually it got called upon where I had to say, is this behavior really giving me rewards? Or if I put it on a scale, is it actually being a detriment to me and not getting me where I thought it was going to get me? And the apparent answer was now, this isn't getting me where I want to be. And if I'm not where I want to be, then I need to evaluate how I got where I was. And this is about the time there was a shift in the Department of Corrections to the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. And then there was Prop 57, which also encouraged people with incentivized time off to go sit in groups. And I started going to more groups, and I started hearing things, and it started predicting my behavior and offering a solution to it. And like I said, I didn't want to actually be broken, but I didn't know how to fix myself. I didn't want to admit that I didn't know how to fix myself. And when I was there, and starting to get some of these things and starting to practicing them, and then started realizing, like I said, before the bad behavior came with some type of reward to me. now I started doing good things that started receiving reward, like positive affirmation from people, a better job, even inside of incarceration. And I started thinking like, wow, this is good, better relationships with people that I had always struggled with, my mom, my daughter, staff and, custody staff, law enforcement, so to speak. And I started thinking like, well, this is a better life for me. And then I became very committed to it because I started thinking, wow, there's so many people around me who still think that this negative way is what they have to do. And this life of actually following the rules and doing what's right was so much more fulfilling than the other path, which I had already tried.
Teresa, This is Justin's story is probably the epitome of an example of what works. But I suspect we live in a society that there is still, for reasonable reasons, for some people, a feeling that the kind of work you do favors the perpetrator more than it favors the victim. And my hunch is when that kind of comment comes to you, oftentimes it comes from a very loud, shrill, unkind voice.
Oftentimes it's just a curious voice. Because we've been working now 14 and a half years, people know me more and better. I got that question a lot. I still do. And here's how I respond. When we started Restorative Partners back in 2011, my goal was to meet those that have been harmed first. And I knocked on a lot of doors trying to find an opening, and the door was closed. Some of it was, "Sister, go home and pray. Go home and pray for people." And I said, well, I already do that, but my prayer leads me to action. And so I want to be a part of that, part of the change that my prayer has led me to. And so I had a suspicion that working with people who were locked up, that good possibility hurt people. And so I found people that were full of hurt in custody, because that's where I had the open door. That's where I had the welcome mat. So I went there, and as I met people in custody, I discovered their story, their trauma. Their behavior didn't come from thin air. There was reason behind the choices they made and the limited vision they had of themselves. Opening that up resonated with me in my original intent, is to address harm, to address pain. So we have spent a lot of years working with that population in custody, both at juvenile hall, jail, CMC. And as we moved towards a continuum of care to the outside and built up our capacity, we are not only continuing with that population on a large scale, but more and more we're introducing the restorative programs where we have opportunities to deal with those that have been harmed first and foremost through dialogue programs. We now have one with the juvenile division and with the adult division through contracts and agreements that we have with our DA and with our probation office. So I'm thrilled about that because finally we're getting to the vision I had in the beginning. But it took many years to build the capacity among all the partners, all the stakeholders. And so I'm really excited to share with your audience today that if you're interested in addressing harms, you can contact us and reach out to us, and we'll see how we can accompany you in that work. Justin mentioned about the girl who was the child of the one he took his life. It begins with that kind of dialogue. It ordinarily, not always, ordinarily begins with those that have been harmed. They first say, we would like to be a part of a circle, of a dialogue. And then those others that are part of that community I described earlier on in our conversation come into play. Whichever which way it goes, where there is readiness, where there's been vetting, where there's been conversation to lead up to a right kind of conversation, where there will be no more harm done, and both parties have been vetted and screened as such, we do that work. And we're excited about it because we see the impact it makes. It changes lives. And finally, people get the healing they always sought but could never get, because as good as we may say our judicial system is, it's very limiting. And those conversations can't be had.
I want to remind folks, if you'd like to be part of this discussion, we do invite you to call in. You are welcome to be on the air and ask your question or comments of our guests. If you would prefer to call in and be more private than that, Brad, our engineer, will take your information, take your question, and we can have it read on the air. If for some reason you would be interested in being contacted back by either of our guests, Brad can also leave contact information for you. The phone number is 805-781-3875. That's 781-3875. Justin, as I look over your biography that you shared with us, it does jump out at me that you basically spend some amount of your time outside of your professional work in real estate, basically visiting individuals who are incarcerated at CMC or Corcoran. What do you see, or how do you see what your background is and your understanding as help to people who are still incarcerated now?
The biggest thing is it provides hope, and a hope that fuels change, because a lot of the people that go into the system, the prisons, are not people who are formally incarcerated. And so when they go and they spread the message and the material, a lot of times the individuals who are incarcerated will use that as a barrier to say, you don't understand where I came from. You don't understand my circumstances. So when I'm able to go there, and I'm just a genuine believer because this work has worked on me, that's why I go back and I'm an avid salesman for it, so to speak. And it breaks that. And then they start seeing themselves in me like, hold on, you're saying that if I do the right thing, I'm going to feel better and I'm going to get what I actually want, instead of, when you, quote, build your criminal resume as you work your way up the criminal ladder, you actually end up at the bottom, because the more you do what you want, the less freedom you actually have. So even inside of the institution, when you're building up a reputation, you start getting onto a higher security yard, which has less program. And then you continue to do things there, and that gets you in a segregation unit. And then you continue to do things there, and then now you're in solitary, like you're by yourself, and you get to come out for maybe 1 hour a day into what they call a dog kennel. And that's when you realize, everything I was doing to make it to the top, what I thought was, you know, the right thing that was glorified by my peers, got me, you know, alone and with nothing. And I can relate to them, connect with them in that, having done that, and talk to them. Well, when we actually follow a few limited guidelines, we get all this freedom to do, you know, all these things, and you'll actually start feeling good. And you can start with a lot of people, empathy is learned. You know, I developed some empathy by first kind of having an apathy for myself. And then that apathy kind of was to my daughter. And then that ended up being empathy for somebody else. And so we also walk people through developing empathy. And then they start, you know, just with, hey, have you ever done something nice for somebody? How did that feel? And then they're like, man, that it kind of felt good. And then you start, okay, how can we build on that? And that's why I go back to continue, because that's where I came from. It's what I know. It's who people who relate with me. And I feel like, you know, before there was 7 out of 10 people were going to get out and reoffend. So if I really want to be a part of the solution of having an impact on future crime, then I should go where there's going to be the highest likelihood. And look, over the last couple of years, recidivism in California is significantly down.
Yes. Fred, over 1/3 of our staff have been justice involved. And it's for that very reason Justin just mentioned. There's credibility. You understand. You've been there. You've done that. And you've come out on the other side of it. Not perfect, but credible. And you're the best to accompany someone else who's going through the same process. And that includes those that have been harmed as well as those who have been harmed.
How often do you have to address the anger and frustration? I'm gonna choose a phrase here that I would rather not use, but I want to be candid about it. Mm-hmm. How many people say to you, "How come you're committing all this time to perpetrators? What about all the victims? What about all the victims? Doggone it, who's taking care of them?"
It's all of our responsibility as the community to work with those that have caused harm and those who have experienced harm. And it's not a clean divide between those oftentimes. Yes, there are those that have truly been harmed and never committed any kind of serious crime themselves. But sometimes it lies within each individual. And the more conscious we are of those yin and yang within us, the more conscious we are that it also lives in the community. So I go where there is an open door, and we spend time with people who have been harmed consistently. Unfortunately, it led them to behavior to protect themselves and also to a behavior that was criminal. But addressing harm, addressing trauma, is what we do every day, day in and day out. And if we want to label it as sort of two different camps, I guess you could. That reason why we spent so much time with those that have officially harmed people is because that's where the door was open, where we could engage in the practices. Now, that's changing rapidly. As I mentioned earlier, we are engaging much more the opportunities to meet with those that have experienced harm and being able to process with them and engage them where it's safe, where it's vetted, with those that have caused harm. So we are a full service agency. And because we see the community always on a road of healing, and we will entertain the opportunity because we're passionate about our mission of transforming lives impacted by crime through healing services and relationships.
We are talking today with folks from Restorative Partners, and we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with you in about 90 seconds. Catch your breath. We'll continue the discussion. This is Central Coast Voices.
Hola, I'm Maria Hinojosa. Every Thursday afternoon at 2, you can hear Latino USA on KCBX. Latino USA is a Peabody Award-winning radio journal of news and culture from a Latino-Latina perspective. It chronicles how we're living, shaping, and changing the United States of America. Tune in for in-depth reporting, candid conversations, and fascinating stories. Join me for Latino USA Thursdays from 2 to 3 on KCBX Central Coast Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, one of England's most acclaimed writers, Julian Barnes, talks about getting diagnosed with a rare form of blood cancer 5 years ago and his reflections on illness, mortality, religion, he's agnostic, and the unreliability of memory. He wrote an earlier book about grief after his wife of nearly 30 years died. Join us.
There are a lot of things in the economic world right now that are changing, like the tax code.
We can't solve our problems with a tax cut. We need to solve it with a tax reform.
It has to be a win-win-win-win-win, and that is very hard to achieve with tax policy.
This happens once in a generation.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. We'll guide you through it next time on Marketplace.
That is a look ahead today on our Thursday here on KCBX. Got fresh air coming your way from 3 to 4, that's followed by Marketplace from 4 to 4:30. And Latino USA immediately follows this program from 2 to 3. We are right now enjoying a very interesting conversation with Fred Monroe and his guests on Central Coast Voices. And Fred, just before the break, I took a very interesting phone call from Glenn in Lompoc, who told me a brief story about someone he knows, a young man who worked in the jail systems, who suffered quite a bit of burnout, but was somebody who really sincerely wanted to help the people incarcerated there. And so the crux of his question, I think, if I understood it correctly, was how can we connect people who want to help jail workers and with restorative partners, maybe if they're interested in doing some of the work with them or learning more about it? And also, how do we connect incarcerated people with the services that restorative partners can assist them with?
Thank you, Brad. You basically came up with one caller I can assure you, tie up the program for the next hour and a half.
Some questions are like that. Yeah.
Oh, it's wonderful. I'm not complaining at all.
Yeah.
But I think that's a good question.
It was a very interesting conversation. His friend has been a young man, and he says that he's seen this young man basically age because of a lot of the experiences that he's seen other people have, and that he, of course, you know, as a corrections officer has had to experience mm-hmm. himself. But he has compassion, but it's wearing him down inside that system. And I think his friend rightfully thought that he would be a good candidate to maybe direct his energies and desire to help in another direction.
Thank you. Teresa, jump in.
Yes, I love that question. All of us who are engaged in this work have to realize that it is heavy lifting. And we have to pace ourselves. There has to be good self-care, no matter which way you're coming to this. And I see our community members who are working in law enforcement, in custody and on the streets, needing all the support they can to take care of themselves. How do they do that? Just like anyone else, having a good balance of mind, body, and spirit attentiveness to your being. You can't be in this work if you're not working your own life. And that's being attentive to your emotional literacy, your intellectual literacy, your relationships, the pace of your work and engagement. It's constantly having your hand on the pulse for yourself, so that you aren't overexposed to secondary trauma. Law enforcement people are exposed to drama and trauma every day, and they need to be attentive to that. What do they need? Do they need to talk therapy through a therapist? Do they need a spiritual kind of practice? Do they need just good, healthy vacations and time off and loving relationships? That's the secret sauce that we all have to abide by to be wholly human. And so I have witnessed what your gentleman caller has talked about. There's a toxicity in custody, and you have to be aware of that all the time and make sure that you detox when you leave a space like that. So if they want to be connected with us, go to our website, restorativepartners.org. Go to, at the top, contact, and that will lead you to the volunteer sign up. And then we'd be glad to have a conversation with you. Last Saturday, we had new orientation for volunteers. We had about 40 new people sign up to work with us on one or several of our programs. So you can get a hold of us very easily on our website. Please, Glenn, I invite you to come and inquire how you can get more information.
If for some reason you don't have computer access, I think we can probably share with them that you currently operate a cafe in San Luis Obispo
yes, we do.
Can probably connect with you too.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that.
So the Bridge Cafe is a social enterprise. So the idea is to those that have been justice involved to give them opportunities to work. And it's a concession restaurant at our government center downtown, 1074 Higuera Street. And go taste and see not only the good food, but the people serving it up. And have empathy and compassion as you enter the space, because we're trying to break the stigma there, and that's not always easy. I can tell you lots of good stories of being in that space and the cross-cultural opportunities they are to engage our mission. But that would be one way, and then just call us on our general line, 805-242-1272, and we'll address your needs and where we can help you, who can help you with your questions.
And that phone number is on their website also.
Yes.
Okay. The projects that you take on involve some things that were, I guess I was surprised when I read your notes for the program this week, because you've been on before, and that it now involves some community outreach programs, including the Duval Ranch.
Yes.
Can you tell us about that?
So over the years, I became a random visitor to Dan Duval at the ranch there, probably for the last 12, 15 years. I would just go up and sit under a tree and talk with him, get to know him as a human being, and witness the care he had for people. Again, it was his own way of doing things, and not everybody would agree with that. I appreciate that. And learned what an interesting person is, what a background he had, and like many, is a hurting person. And so sometimes that got communicated in his desire to help. As you know, he's been a colorful character in our community for years because of the ranch. And a lot of the violations on property that have happened there. About 3.5 years ago, his health took a dive, and his family came and moved him to the East Coast. And the property was put in receivership by the courts. And ever since May of 2023, we have been engaged with the receiver to have opportunity to be on site to work with the men that live there and to get to know them and to understand their needs and to assist them with what they need to have their life better. We are in escrow to buy that property now. Restorative Partners has made that commitment. And God willing, if we have written a very intensive grant called Home Key Plus, and if that grant is given to us, if our application was submitted over 9 months ago, we hope that we will find out soon. Getting that funding will help us purchase the property and renovate, especially the main horseshoe building, to provide more housing and better housing to help meet the standards that are required for us to have permanent supportive housing there and transitional housing there, along with our wraparound services. So this is our mission. We go where people normally don't want to go. We serve people that most people or many people would say, forget it. That's not us. We're like the first responders. A fire's there, and we go towards the fire, not away from it. And this would be a resource for our entire community if we're able to get the ranch and transform it into what we're calling HARC, Healing and Restoration Campus.
And what's the timeline we're looking at?
Well, I wish I had that answer. As State of California.
I'm sorry, I couldn't let it go without asking. Okay.
The State of California has told us that it's open, and they haven't given us an end date of the disbursement of funds that the voters granted the state of California over a year and a half ago, maybe even more than that. And so we just keep engaged, and we've done 9 threshold clarifications on the grant, 3 video conferences, and advocacy from a variety of places in our county to get us through this. And I'm hopeful it will be decided in our favor very soon.
I have to ask this, and it may make me look stupid, but I'll ask it anyway. I've never heard the expression threshold verification before.
Threshold clarification. What that is you write a grant, and then they have a question. And they say, in order for you to move ahead, you must answer these questions. So you're going through a threshold to get to the next level of consideration. And through it, you're clarifying more detail about your application. And we've been through 9 of them.
Which is at least 8 more than you probably want.
Oh, you better believe it.
All right. Well, and by the way, thank you for bringing the Bridge Cafe into the discussion.
You're very welcome.
It wasn't our main focus today, but it's wonderful, and I can't let it go by. You have great French toast.
Yummy. Come and see.
Yeah. Justin, back to you for a few minutes. One of the things that that stuck in my mind when I read through your background and your resume was you probably have one of the pleasures that a lot of people from your background have to struggle with forever, which is employment. I had a neighbor when I lived in Grover Beach about 30 years ago who was a former CMC inmate, paroled, very kind, considerate individual who spent years and years just trying to get any kind of job, because the first question on the background, or one of the first questions on a background interview, was your law enforcement, your background of incarceration, if you will. It was a cycle that he made it through a number of times, but was almost impossible to break.
You know, you gotta work like it depends on you, but pray like it depends on God, and somewhere it meets in the middle. I had never had a job before besides inside of an institution. I just got out. I made a resume. I submitted it to any place that said entry-level position, because I figured that's what I was. And somebody had given me a call back and said, did you apply for the wrong position? You look a little overqualified, because I had opportunities in there in factories, working for staff, doing vocational training. And so I had developed some modest skills. And when in the phone interview, I said, yeah, you're right. I applied for the entry-level position. I have those skills, but I've never had a real job before. I spent most of my life in prison. And they were taken aback. That's a very interesting thing to say in a phone interview. And I said, well, I figure with the internet, you're going to soon find out. So I just want to be up front. And they said they could appreciate that, and they wanted to – they said, we'll go ahead and go to the next stage. I went into a personal interview with them. I showed them, you know, what staff inside had said about, you know, my work ethic and what I had learned there. And I also told them, like I told relayed before, was that this wasn't really – for me, I understood that I didn't deserve this opportunity of freedom, and that I was going to be the best steward that I could, and that I was going to work for them in honor of what I did and how tremendous I understood that this opportunity was to have a job, to have freedom, to have anything. And that's what and they said, you know, we'll take a chance on you. And I've continued to follow through with that, and it's been good. It's helped continue to develop my, you know, professional status.
What about that process helps you have the tools to deal with people that you currently work with in CMC or Corcoran who are looking towards the time at which they have the same opportunity or a similar opportunity. Let me interject. I suspect you deal with a lot of skepticism when you first are meeting with some of those individuals.
Inside?
Yes.
It's very brief because I've been where they are. So, you know, and they might still – they're you know, you can't – I can't force people to recover. I can just tell them my story and then – you know, a lot of people relate, but some people still will have the excuses. Oh, it was luck, or it was X, it was Y, it was Z. But a lot of people do hear how I used it, and they say, "Okay, well, what do I have to lose by doing that same thing here?" Because the culture in there is like, "Oh, I shouldn't take my job seriously. I should try to hang out on the yard." And I tell them, hey, you can go and you can use this job. And yeah, you're not getting paid, but you don't get paid to go to college either. You know, so you're getting an opportunity which will lead to another opportunity later on. When people hear that it did bear fruit for me, they're more encouraged to participate in there because now they see how it does net what it is intended to.
And you're doing some practical skill set building too. I know you've been engaged in financial literacy and working with folks on the inside with that. Can you share any insights that you've gotten from offering those kind of life skills?
Yeah, I found that even myself, like if I'd I had had money before, but I didn't know how to manage it. And there was just little simple things that I'd never done, paying bills and things of that nature. I'd ended up reading Dave Ramsey in there, and I was like, oh, he just laid out some simple things. And then I put those into practice, and then it worked for me. And then I now take things like back of that nature and built like a workbook for incarcerated people where I have snapshots and different things that I've read and put into practice, and then snapshots of how I used a program like I went to Restorative Partners, who helps you transition and subsidize some of your living for a few months, and then how you can use that to save and to build and then to make the next conservative step to being independent and not having to live off the government and being able to contribute and be a paying member of your society, taking care of your own bills, because those things feel good. And I think that's our obligation, like coming out of incarceration, to be the most contributing member that we can. And I've had graduates of it. I employ some graduates of it who are also following that roadmap and living like that. And it's really rewarding to see that people are experiencing the same experience I did.
Sister Teresa, you have some events coming up in the near future, and I'm looking at the time, and I want to make sure we don't lose track of those. Won't you tell us about some of those?
Okay.
Because I suspect they can involve people who are not already involved in your program.
Yes. So I'm out and about in the community quite a bit, and this weekend I'll be at St. Patrick's Church in Rio Grande, and we're speaking at all of the services, 7 of them, both English and Spanish, and you want to know more about it, come to church. And afterwards, I'll have our info table, and we'd love to talk with you. We welcome you to the Chamber of Commerce Mixer we're having at our main office, which is right here, 3380 South Higuera, on March 18th. It'll be a wonderful engagement. We'll have staff and volunteers and board members and members of the business community interfacing with restorative justice and restorative practices. Our big fundraiser this year is May 16th at the Los Osos Community Center. And it's a bridging the gap event. Every 2 years, we try to address the stigma, the gap that exists in community when we don't understand each other and understand what restorative justice is all about. And this year, it's around art for change, particularly pen and ink. So portrait drawing, tattoo artist competition. There'll be all kinds of interesting pieces in order to support our work. Our goal is to raise another $130,000 from this event. If you're a listener and you want to sponsor the event, come on down. I would love to meet with you and see how you would like to be a major sponsor for this family-friendly, amazing engagement on Saturday, May 16th.
And why don't you give us a little bit more information about the Bridge Cafe?
Thank you.
Because when it involves food, people pay attention.
Oh, yeah. If you feed them, they will come, you know? And don't be shy about the parking. I know it's tricky downtown, but, you know, that's a small irritation. In comparison to the food and the fellowship, bring your parties. We had a woman there celebrate her 90th birthday, and her whole family took over the whole porch there. Be creative. You can sit inside the government center at the tables, too, and we have nice seating inside. Lots of good food. Think about us as a caterer for your party. I'm celebrating a friend's 50th anniversary as a priest in a few weeks, and all our cakes are coming from the Bridge Cafe. So think about it in terms of your own personal, but also business. We're happy to cater your business luncheons, breakfasts, and come and enjoy food and taste restorative justice.
That was the best restaurant commercial we've had on the air. Brad's getting up out of his engineering chair and he's heading there for lunch. as we often do at the, towards the end of the program, I remind my listeners, who everyone knows that, and my guests, that I want to make sure that you do not get only stepped on by my conversation. So we do the last of the program, do a few minutes of my guests having a chance to share with us what they think is most important for people to remember about this conversation. And Justin, I'm going to start with you. What would you like people to walk out of or walk away from their radio this afternoon and not lose track of?
Well, I know there's a big divide where people say, you know, is it fair to the victim? Maybe not. But is anything going to fix that? Do I deserve freedom? No. But having that opportunity, you know, that grace in action allows me to be part of a contributing member to society instead of a $75,000+ cost to the community. I'm now contributing to it. I'm working with the people that may reoffend again. I'm, you know, doing these things. And what fuels me is the desire to not make my victim's name in vain. And so it is circled back to the restorative part of this, is that knowing what's happened to them, I don't want to see that happen to anyone else. And trying to repair that harm is my motivation, my driver today. And I'm grateful for all the people that have given me opportunities. Like we talked about that corrections officer. It was people like that who withstood the culture in there to be able to provide us these opportunities. Those are the things that changed my life, changed, you know, everything for me. And I just hope that I'm able to take these things and continue to impact that, be part of the solution where that ripple effect used to go out and harm. I hope there's a new ripple effect of hope and healing for everybody.
Well put. Thank you. Teresa, you get the last word.
I guess the biggest word, Justin, that you said much earlier is hope. Hope for us all. For those that are experiencing incarceration, I pray that you can experience the hope that Justin is living and wants to role model for you. For those that have been harmed, know that restorative justice is not being soft on crime. It is all about accountability and hard work. Justin got here today not because he sat on his laurels, it's because he got up every morning and recommitted himself to giving back to this community and to make reparation, restitution for his victims. It is the hardest job if you're going to take this path. I hope that you all walk away with that, knowing that it is a community experience of healing and restoration. It's not one or the other, one side or the other. We all need to be involved in this, and let it be a ripple effect through the universe right now, which could use this in so many dark places, war-torn areas, people that are suffering because of the lack of basic needs, and people that are so marginalized and so desperate that they feel they don't have a choice or a voice. Restorative Partners is a voice for all concerned with the justice system.
Thank you. Sister Teresa, this is not the first time you've been here, and I'm always glad to have you back because the work that you do is so admirable. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, this has been Central Coast Voices. Glad you've been with us. Chris Kington Barker will be in my chair next week on Thursday. I'm not quite sure what her topic is yet, but Chris always has wonderful guests, and she'll be with you. We remind you that Central Coast Voices is a production of KCBX Public Radio. It is a predominantly volunteer-run organization, and we are volunteers who put this program on. If you'd like to leave input or program suggestions for Central Coast Voices, you can reach us at voices@kcbx.org. That's voices@kcbx.org. All of our hosts and all of the staff here will be able to hear what your suggestions are for programs or questions you may have about today's program. This is listener-supported public radio. Thank you also to Brad Kyle, our in-studio engineer. He always does a great job for us. And thank you to my guests today, Sister Teresa Harpin and Justin Ennis. Wonderful folks from Restorative Partners. It is a pleasure to have these folks on and talk about a wonderful program. This has been Central Coast Voices. I'm Fred Monroe. I will see you again soon. Mm-hmm.